Few New Yorkers have been as ubiquitous in the entertainment world, from acting to writing to podcasting, as Michael Rapaport. His path to more than 100 TV and film credits began with stand-up comedy in the late 80s. These days, he is starring in the Showtime series White Famous.
Peter, you should be embarrassed.
Interesting.
Well, why do you keep saying interesting? This is an NPR. Peter, this is a condescending, stupid conversation that you start.
Sure. That's interesting, too.
Okay, we should tell you that Rapaport is actually a fan of NPR. He's also an obsessive sports fan, and that is what he writes about in a new book. The book has a title that's kind of funny and even accurate, but just heads up, the title may not be something parents want their kids to hear. And that is how we began our conversation when Rapaport paid a visit to our studio in New York City. So this book has balls. I don't know yet if we're going to have to bleep that or not. Depending, I mean, it is a sports reference, I guess.
Come on, man. You have to bleep this book has balls? NPR, it's 2017, man. You guys, who are you fooling?
I'm on your side here.
Basketball, football, tennis ball, soccer ball.
So Michael Rapaport and I talked about his book and his shattered hoop dreams.
Grew up wanting to be a pro basketball player, and I continued playing all sports until I was about 13. But when I saw Larry Bird play Magic Johnson in the NCAA championship game, that was like a game changer for me. I wanted to be like Larry Bird. I wanted to be like Magic Johnson. And I set a goal of being in the NBA, and I would live my life accordingly. I practiced. I didn't go to family functions because I had my life on a practice schedule, and I just loved it.
You got to explain this to me, because you mentioned Larry Bird, the great Boston Celtic. Dare I say you kind of look like him?
Yes. Yes. You know, when I was a kid, people used to call me Bird, and I took it as a compliment because I knew, although they weren't comparing my games, it was as close as I could get to being as good as Larry Bird. I don't think if we weren't talking about basketball and I wasn't so much loving basketball, I wouldn't get the comparison, but I'll take it. Although definitely now, I don't think Larry has aged as well as me.
But you hated Larry Bird. Like,
I mean, you
wanted to be him, but you hated him.
Once he became a Celtic, my DNA took over, and I didn't grow up in this kind of family where, you know, you were taught to hate Boston sports. I just hated the Celtics intuitively.
It just happened.
Naturally,
you're born that way.
It was like a fish to water.
Mm-hmm. You have a 23-point list in the book of why Cleveland's LeBron James will never be Michael Jordan, the legend from the Chicago Bulls. You blast LeBron for everything from his headbands to his sneakers to his shaving habits. But you actually write in the end that LeBron is better than Michael Jordan in some ways, especially off the court. Explain that.
LeBron, you know, has done so much off the court, you know, from social issues, speaking out on race and politics. So I wanted to give him that respect and acknowledge him, you know, because as much as I wanted to break his chops, you know, I wanted to acknowledge that he's been a great star. And I'm sure he's inspired many, many other athletes and many other, you know, sort of famous people to continue speaking out when necessary and when they feel like it.
Although it did get personal at the 2010 NBA All-Star Game. You were with your kids and you were trying to say hi to LeBron.
And he was rude to my kids. He turned his back to us.
Hmm. Did you ever have a chance to ask him about that incident?
I never spoke to him about it.
Could he have just been not realizing who you were?
I met LeBron before he played a game in the NBA. He knows exactly who I am.
Couldn't have, maybe just like a bad day he was having?
Nah. Nope.
All right. Okay. Well, one thing you wrote about that, about the LeBron incident, you wrote, "You've read about my past, LeBron. You understand the level of emotion I live with inside my body." And that hit me, that level of emotion, especially about sports. Is that what prompted you to write this book?
Pretty much. You're asking me, these are very NPR-like questions. I like that.
Well, thank you. We try.
You know, I'm a fan, you know, and you know, I'm making fun of myself, and sports is one of the only safe places where you can articulate your emotions, that ABC Wide World of Sports motto, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. You know, that's what I was talking about, you know, because I definitely feel the thrill of victory and I feel the agony of defeat.
Yeah, when I read your book or listen to you, the thing I really connect with, I remember these long drives. I would go to Pittsburgh Steelers games at a time when I lived, you know, like 4 hours away. And if they lost I would want to spend the four-hour drive back listening to sports talk radio from Pittsburgh and hearing everyone else be angry with me. And it was like, that's what I needed.
Right.
Like, what does that say about us, sports fans?
You know what? It doesn't say anything about us. It's like it's a culture, you know? It's a culture to itself. And it's like we get off on the loving. We get off on the hating. We get off on the frustrations, the highs and lows of it. And and it's a great thing because, you know, we have so much going on with politics and problems in the world. And I think sports is been a safe haven. You know, I'll never forget when the Yankees were in the World Series after 9/11 that year. You know, it was like that's where we went to let our guards down. And that's where we went to sort of forget about what was going on in the world.
But how can it do both things? How can it be intertwined with politics in a way that you like and also be a safe haven from politics?
It just does. You're not necessarily going to like it. You know, obviously the kneeling has been the subject of the year. You know, it's like before you get to the arena, before you get to the gym, you're a person. And before you put on your Cleveland Cavaliers jersey as LeBron, he's a person. He's a father. He's a black man. And I'm glad that he speaks out because people are tired of just, you know, being, you're going to cheer for me when I'm making plays, but you're going to vilify me when I'm speaking out. Nah, you're going to love me. You're going to understand my experience. And I'm glad that these athletes are not just, you know, happy just being, you know, pieces of meat, essentially.
Let me just finish by asking you what you hope people will get out of your book.
I think I hope people get out of this book has balls. It's a good time. It's a celebration of the true essence of loving, hating, and everything in between with sports and a little bit of Real Housewives.
The MVP of Talking Trash, Michael Rapoport. Thanks so much for talking trash with us.
Yo, I appreciate this interview. This was great. Please don't cut this out. I'm a fan of NPR, so it's a real honor for me to be here.
We didn't cut it out, Michael. His new book is called This Book Has Balls, Sports Rants from the MVP of Talking Trash.